like to start this afternoon by reading Case 8 from The Gateless Gate. The priest, Wei Wan, said to a monk, "Si Chang made 100 carts. If you take off both the wheels and the axle, what would be vividly apparent?" So, what is a cart without a wheel, without wheels, and without an axle? Is the wheel a cart? Is the axle a cart? Is the box the cart? Or is it only a cart if we have a box that has a relationship with some wheels and has a relationship with an axle? And has a relationship with someone to push the car. And is it a cart if it doesn't have some turnips to carry? And a path to push it along? So, this made me start thinking about what is the most essential piece of something. Can we deconstruct something down to just a single essence, its identity? So I did a little thought experiment with myself. So I thought, well, I'm Fran. I have this body that's clearly identifiable. So that's a thing, right? But then I started thinking, well, I'm not a body without the food that I depend on. So I definitely have to be in relationship to some food. I'm not a body without my relationship with water, without my relationship to the whole environment that supports me. And who am I without my thoughts? Or who am I without my emotions? Or who am I without my bodily sensations? So I kept thinking about it and started thinking, well, so my body's covered with this skin, which is in relation to the things that the skin contains. So it's in relation to the bones in my body, which only work if they're in relation to the muscles in my body. And none of that works without being in relation to my heart and my circulatory system, which only works in relationship to the other organs in my body. And these have to be in a very precise relationship. It's one little thing not working properly. I can be in pretty big trouble. But then if I look at, say, my heart, it's composed of cells. And there are pacemaker cells and muscle cells and blood cells and nerve cells, all that have to be in a very precise relationship in order for that heart to be a heart. for it to function at all. And any one of those cells, if I look closely, is made up of molecules. Also, each very specific and in specific relationship. So it might be DNA, it might be mitochondria, all these specific parts of that cell that have to be working properly. And each one of those little organelles are made up of elements, which are made up of atoms, which are made up of protons and neutrons, all of which have to be in precise relationship to each other. And ultimately, those protons and neutrons are made up of quarks and gluons, which are just energy. So where is the thing here? So then I thought I'd go in the other direction. And I thought, well, I've got this body that's very clear to see, very nicely defined, but this body doesn't exist outside of a family or a community. Very dependent on these external supports. And these communities are in relation to each other, and they form larger communities or societies, which are in relation to sometimes states or country boundaries, continents, in very important relationship to each other. And we have all of those in relation to a planet, which operates in relationship to other planets and stars, none of which operate independently. The planet Earth, outside of our solar system, wouldn't be a planet. And solar systems are related in galaxies and galaxies in the universe. And so nothing, I could come up with nothing that was separate and independent. And so it seems like we draw sort of arbitrary lines around things that are kind of convenient to think about, but they're just conceptual. If we think about a mountain, well, that's a thing you can look at. That's pretty clear. That's a thing. But if we look more closely, a mountain is rock in relation to soil, in relation to trees, in relation to water, in relation to animals. And so even that is an assemblage of relationships that we put a boundary around and call a mountain. I read a book that I love. It's called The Hidden Life of Trees by a German forester named Peter Wallenben. And he tells a story about being out in the forest, and he was in this beech woods, and he noticed these mossy stones that were covered in moss. And he looked more closely, and he scraped a little of the moss off the stone, and there was bark under there. And he was really surprised to see that. And then he took his knife and he scraped at the bark, and there was chlorophyll under there. So this wasn't a stone at all. It was alive. And when he looked more carefully, he saw that there was a ring of these moss-covered stones. It was about 5 feet in diameter. And he realized that it was the remnants of a huge ancient tree. But the center of the stump had completely decomposed into humus many years ago. And there's only this outer rim of this ancient tree that remained, but very much alive. And So he wondered how in the world that could be and why it would be. And surrounding this ancient stump was a forest of younger beeches. And he calculated that that this tree must have been felled 400 or 500 years ago. So it had been kept alive for 400 or 500 years. And he discovered that the way it had been kept alive was by this elaborate underground root system from the younger trees. And either the roots connected with each other, they were anastomosed together, or there was a network of fungal mycelia that connected the root tips to each other, so that there was this subterranean connected organism that was also connected to this ancient ancestor tree. And it was the younger trees that were keeping this mother tree alive. And he realized that the reason they were doing that was because this ancient ancestor tree had much more life experience than these younger trees. So it knew that when the gypsy moths came, that this was a recipe you used to make the chemical that would be distasteful to the gypsy moths. And when the deer came and browsed you, that this was the recipe for the gas that you emitted that would make the deer go away. And when the ice storm came and amputated one of your limbs, that this was the recipe for the healing bark that you laid down in order to cover the wound. And so there was this amazing symbiotic relationship that had developed between these younger trees and the ancient ancestor tree. And I love that story. And I was thinking about it one day when I was out for a walk in the woods myself. And I looked up into the treetops, and there was this one large oak, had this beautiful crown, and it reminded me of the form and shape of a nerve cell. So nerve cells have this long trunk called an axon that branches out at one end into these finger-like projections that are called dendrites. And Josh told me that dendrite actually means tree-like. So I don't know whether neurons were named for trees or trees were named for neurons, but anyway, there's a lovely similarity there. And so I was inspired to write a little poem, which I'd like to share with you. Which took me to an interesting place, but this is how it goes. Arboreal axons and dendrites, reaching high into the heavens for connection to life-giving solar rays, to the movement of wind and rain and snow, to chemical news of the welfare of the community. Not only receiving, but giving moisture to the biosphere, nutrients for the leafy manufactories, oxygen to breathe the animal realm. Aerial mirrors of subterranean neural networks, hundreds of thousands of billions of synapses, intricate highways of vitalizing support braided through the natural world. Young supporting old, strong supporting weak, healthy supporting infirm, an endless net of interrelations, engines of life, giving and receiving, all conspiring for the good of the whole. Creation by any other name, care by any other name, love by any other name. So the space of connection is love. That's what binds us together. That's the glue of the universe. And that is the underlying fabric that's woven through everything. The formless field of benefaction. And the reason this matters is that we have agency over our actions and the way we behave in those relationships. We chant, "My deeds are my closest companions. I am the beneficiary of my deeds. My deeds are the ground on which I stand." And when I chant that, this I that am the beneficiary of my deeds extends in all directions. This is not the little I in my body, which also benefits, but this is the body that extends throughout space and time. And when I act from a place of aversion or grasping or delusive certainty, then I am damaging or rupturing those bonds of relationship. And that's how we cause suffering for ourselves and for other people. But when we connect with each other through this love, then we're connecting with who we truly are. Then we're connecting with our true Buddha nature. And this is how we save all beings, by recognizing that the assemblage of relationships that identify us extend through all space and time. No circumference and no center. And that space of connection is love. Just as sunshine breaks through clouds, the compassionate light of our essential nature shines through the cracks in our delusion. Compassion unbound naturally flows out beyond duality. It is absolute and universal love, the compassion of the one body. As we gradually clarify the heart's eye that sees the absolute, we more and more clearly experience this unbound compassion. We come to love everything with immeasurable depth, and we know that all things completely love us. This naturally opens a life of infinite gratitude and peace.
So, please sit comfortably and come into Sangha relationship. Be invited into our practice of Dharma dialogue, knowing that any comment or observation or question you bring forth is a service and a benefit to the one body of beings here and throughout the universe hearing this Dharma talk. Karen.
I found your talk very moving. And the turnips at the beginning, I just adored. but as you were talking about the the rupturing that happens with delusive cert when we fall victim to delusive certainty. I had right away. I thought of the baby trees and how it's unavoidable, and then the idea of the ancient tree with all of the here's what you can do when that happens, and there's something that can be done. And I feel like that's my experience with this practice, like these things, the million and one ways in which I hurt other people, and when I'm not even aware of it, or it hurt, like that this practice is about coming back again and again, and to that ancient tree that's like, oh yeah, that's what we do, and this is what we can do too. So.
Yeah, I was thinking about, you know, what you were saying about the way in which suffering is caused or is a name for problems in these relationships, and you know, in a way they aren't ever ruptured or broken, and part of the delusion is the belief that we can be separate, that we can ever be not in relationship, and that any of our actions anywhere aren't on this one body. And even when a part of the one body is really stuck in delusive certainty of scenarios of isolation, it actually is still included and still loved and cared for and nourished and maintained by the truly unconditioned and unconditional containing love of the universe, which is such a relief to me in the context of the practice, because like it's a great comfort to know that even my fuckness and my harm causing and my confusion can't break it, because it is always held. And in what you were saying, Karen, the link you were drawing to the practice, I was really hearing how, you know, like the Buddhas and ancestors and the teachings and are that. Yeah, these are things that happen, and here's how we, as this one body, can meet that. And what a lovely kind of way to be in relationship.
I feel like I rarely hear about deconstruction coupled with relationship. I hear a lot about deconstruction of identity, and I feel like, the relationship part's sometimes left out. I so loved the going inward, like the bones and the muscles and the cells, and then the external community. And of course, those aren't separate either. But you pointed out, Demetrius, the hidden life of trees. And as you were talking, I was feeling like you're speaking about the hidden life of humans, but also of everything. But like, we think we're communicating and we know how we communicate, but there are these undercurrents. And those aren't separate from the hidden life of everything else. But I also like the distinction between the small I and the I that extends, because I think of the three refuges, and every time we chant them, the I seems so stressed, like I take refuge, and really it's like the Buddha Dharma Sangha is much bigger than the I, you know. And it's just like, so I really so many thoughts called forth. Thank you so much.
That's such an interesting point about the three refuges. And so in some ways it's we, but in some ways it's I as the universe take refuge in the Buddha as the universe. Yeah, thank you. Thank you for that.
We do that in the five remembrances too. Mm-hmm. I am the nature to grow old.
Right.
But I, you know, the line that I quoted, my deeds are my closest companion. I am the beneficiary of my deeds. That's the big I, you know, that's. Mm-hmm.
Right. Right. And this is the, you know, there's the physics has the law of conservation of energy. No energy is ever lost, right? And the universe has the law of conservation of karma. No, no karma is ever lost. It all happens and has its effect in the universe. And this is the, this is the I that we are both acting as and acting upon in all of our deeds.
So I think about, point of view, what level scale we choose to look at things from. So when you zoom in and you zoom out, you have certain stopping points. We'll look at things from the level of the human level, we'll look at things from the level of the body part of the cells, you know, parts of the cells, atomic level, or bigger. And then trees, like, oh, that is a tree. And then you're like, well, wait a minute. No, this is a tree. It's like a construction of an old tree mixed with other. Just the idea that the level that we name things from is kind of almost as random as how the number 10 is super important because we happen to have 10 fingers. But really, is there any hierarchy at all in terms of the level that you look at things from?
There's this is a principle that is one that a lot of the koans in our koan system address and play with. You know, the way that holding up a flower is actually holding up the entire universe. And there's a koan that says, if you raise a speck of dust, the whole universe flourishes. If you do not raise a speck of dust, the whole universe perishes. And Hongzhi in our sutra book talks about, or I think Hongzhi and Dogen both talk about sitting within a speck of dust. And Dogen says, and when you are within a speck of dust, it is not narrow, and when you are the entire universe, it is not broad. Julie.
Thank you for the talk. It's all beautiful and all true. And I felt a little resistance as you were speaking to some of it. And then I think where the resistance comes from is that I know I have a tendency to grab on and use the word love. Okay, now I understand what love is. Now I've got it. Now I'm clear. Now I really understand it. It's about connection. Therefore, there's a ruptured relationship in my life. I've failed. I've taken that the love at the absolute, which you're described so beautifully, and tried to make it small again, and tried to exclude some things from it. Yeah, I tend to rarely, I find words like that to be so big that they are easy to get caught into to thinking, I know what it is. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, and that is the, that is the dynamic that we are sitting amid in our zazen, and seeing the ways we are creating these false boundaries around our story of what is me, is love, is it. Yeah. And you're pointing to the the risk of kind of reifying even relationship into a thing that then we can definitely know and have and separate from whatever.
That's what we do. We reify things.
Donna.
Thank you, friend. I really also appreciated the deconstruction. And then followed with the idea that we then create a circumference around a set of the deconstruction and say, and this is it. And that there is none, and there is no circum, and there is no center. It just shifted in my mind, sort of me out of this I. I'm watching my stories all morning that are all about this little I. And putting me back into the experience.
Yeah, it's helpful to me in exactly that way. You know, it doesn't take, it's not too much of a leap to see how we are not separate from these things that we depend on, food, water, air. And yet we somehow put a boundary between ourselves and those other things. But if we can just tear down that little boundary, then it opens up connections infinitely.
Hussein.
I was talking with a friend yesterday about my intention to come here, saying to her, something that occurred to me a while ago from things that I've learned between Zen and therapy, which are so close as to be the same thing, even though they're in different places. And I've learned I am not my feelings, and I've learned I am not my thoughts, and I am not what's left. Well, I guess I'll come here and think about it and try and explore that. And then I sat down for this Dharma talk, and somebody is asking literally, "Where's this iron?" And listening to my conversation. Touch on that and resonate with just this question that I've been thinking about just suddenly manifests again.
Through the mycelium network of human connection. Thank you, Hussein.
Can I say one more thing? Quickly. Your talk also made me think about the intimacy of time, because I feel like relationship with space is so easy to visualize. Like, it was when you were talking about the mountain, the soil and the rock and the water, and those things seem separate physically, and we can say they're in relation, but it's love that binds, and I feel like it's also time. There's like, time is in there intimately, and so I'm just thinking about that, because we can't picture it as easily, but I think it's very, it's space and time, so I'm just reflecting on that.
I love that. Because that's another way for it's easy for me to to recognize that everything's included. Because if you say all time, I mean, nothing falls out of all time. So, you know, even these little things that we think can't be it, because, you know, that's my own hang up or my own whatever. Nothing is excluded from all time. Yeah, I love that.
I just add one thing. As you were talking, there's a new I noticed out inside of Zendo about how where we're sitting is a result of violence and taking land from whole people. And it sort of, as you guys were talking, like, yeah, there is no boundary between, like, we're atoning. We have a responsibility to atone for things that, and it, I encourage everyone to read that sign outside of the Zendo. It's beautiful.
Thank you, everyone. Thank you, Fran.